This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our listener calls, some interesting topics to talk over?
Yes. Popular TV shows, cable TV all over the place, celebrity chefs are basically putting food magazines out of business. Just look at Gourmet's demise. It was something that really was sort of the bastion of food, and we're not seeing it anymore. We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
How does that affect our cooking? And we're going to talk about corn syrup. By any other name, is it just as sweet?
Yeah, they would have changed. We'll find more about that. What's our recipe?
It's jalapeno sea bass with almonds. It's a recipe from the vault. I was recently in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I had a wonderful legislator who came up to me to tell me that he loved this recipe. Why don't you do it again? And I always take advice from other people. When they say, why don't we do a recipe again, I think you will love it.
Jalapeno sea bass. Do you like bass?
I love sea bass. It's one of my favorite fish because it just sort of soaks up, all of the juices that you have in there. It's a wonderful recipe. You don't have to use sea bass in this, but the seasoning is awesome.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Don't forget our medical myth buster later in the hour. And Zorba, a listener, joins in now in Lewiston, New York. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate the call. How can we help you?
Well, I have a question actually about my feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sweat anywhere on my body except for my feet, which isn't awful, but it tends to cause a bad odor. Mm-hmm. And I often ruin shoes and feel self-conscious about the smell.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there's anything that I can do to reduce the odor besides the surgery that I often hear about.
Hmm. Do you wear the same kind of shoes all the time or with different kinds of shoes?
All different kinds of shoes. I wear tennis shoes, flip-flops, Uggs. It doesn't matter. My feet are the only part of me that sweat. And eventually, even though I wear those odor pads, all my shoes end up being ruined.
Right. Not a fun thing to do. By the way, how old were you when you first noticed this?
In high school, probably.
In high school. What have you tried?
I have tried, as I said, the odor pads, putting those in the shoes.
Okay.
I've tried spraying the shoes and my feet with Tenactin.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As well as cream.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it.
I've tried scraping the bottom of my feet, exfoliating them.
Sounds great. You pretty much have tried everything that you have. And by the way, the surgery, I have never sent anyone a surgery.
Okay.
I have good news for you. There is a chemical that you can use. It's by prescription, and it works 98% of the time. And it's called Drysol, Drysol. It comes in a generic. It's called Drysol. And what it really is a souped-up antiperspirant. Now, when I say souped up, it's got, I think, five times the usual amount of antiperspirant. Highly effective, works very well. You follow the instructions. Basically, it's a lotion that you put on your feet, and you put it on your feet every day for about a week or so. And then once the sweat seems to decrease, you only put it on once or twice a week. And it's really, really effective.
Okay, great. And it's not unusual that I only sweat from my feet, is it?
Not unusual.
I mean, I literally do not sweat from any other part of my body.
Not unusual. For some reason, some people sweat in one area more than the other. And this clearly is related to the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. These are when you're talking about surgery, it's basically cutting nerves. And that's, of course, something you want to avoid unless you absolutely have to have it done. So good luck to you. Good luck.
Okay, thank you so much for the advice.
Thank you. We appreciate the call. 1-800-462-7413, our number. It's toll-free, of course. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Austin, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello, Doctor. Hello, Tom.
How can we help?
Well, I hope you can help me figure out how to quit fainting when I fly on an airline. The last two times that I've taken a trip, We flew from Minneapolis to O'Hare, and on takeoff, mm-hmm. both times this happened on takeoff, and as soon as that plane leaves the ground, I can feel the acceleration, and it feels like there's a little dip, and then it accelerates more, and my head just starts spinning inside of my head, about 100 miles an hour. I'm very disoriented, very frightened. I'm grabbing onto the chair to try and stabilize things. I haven't really passed out because I realize this is happening. And when the airplane finally starts to level off, then I relax a little bit, but I am instantly motion sick for the rest of the trip. I wind up vomiting.
Mm.
I don't know what's going on here.
And you don't get this situation in any other venue than planes?
I got it on a roller coaster, and also I got it in my prostate exam. I get pretty nervous about
that. Well, come on. Every guy knows that when you get your prostate examined, you feel a little dizzy. It's not exactly something where you go back to the doctor and say, gee, can you check my prostate again?
Well,
so that's a different issue.
This sounds
and
a little...
roller coasters, I mean, I get dizzy even thinking about roller coasters.
But this sounds a little fear connected.
Mm-hmm. No? Yeah, it does. How long have you had a fear of flying, or do you?
No, I don't think I do. That trip to, I've flown plenty of times. It's always exciting to me when I fly because I don't fly that much. I enjoy it. I look forward to it.
Okay.
And that first trip to Chicago, I mean, I wasn't afraid at all.
Okay, so there wasn't a fear because that's step number one is this fear of flying. And you know what? You know what fear is like. So if you don't have a fear of flying, you don't have a fear of flying. I have a couple of suggestions. First of all, dehydration is the number one questionable issue. So because that's important to get your tissues up to hydration. So that's number one. Hydration is the issue. What I think I would do is I would think about it as an inner ear issue. And the way to treat it, making an assumption that it's an inner ear issue, is to take a medication such as an antihistamine before you fly, which is what people do for motion sickness. And there are a couple of issues. If you take a good antihistamine for this, which is meclizine, you can buy it over-the-counter as Bonine, B-O-N-N-I-N-E, Bonine. That'll often work, or Dramamine. You got to take it an hour or 2 hours before you go on the flight, but it makes you a little sleepy. But I would try that first, and the reason is it crosses the brain-blood barrier, and it tends to be very effective for people with motion sickness, and I would try that. And if you're sleepy, I'd take a couple of shots of coffee, frankly, on the airplane, and I would just caffeinate myself along with this. That'll probably work. If that works, then I would see if Claritin works, which won't make you sleepy. But frankly, if you can tolerate the Bonine or the Dramamine, you're better. I think this is an inner ear problem as long as you hydrate yourself. The other issue is you're worried it's going to come back again, so there's a fear there. And if you take the antihistamine and it solves the problem, eventually the fear is going to either disappear or dissipate. That's what I would do. I don't think it's anything. I think you just have a relative of motion sickness. A lot of people get this. They get an in-ear viral infection, and then they'll do it. Tom has been dizzy at times. I've been dizzy at times. And sometimes I'll be dizzy on and off for a month mm-hmm. or 2 months. And sometimes it bothers me some days, and some days it doesn't. But I know what it is. I think you probably have an inner ear issue. Benign positional vertigo may be what you have. But try the meclizine, try the Bonine, and let us know.
Well, all right. We're flying for Christmas, and so I'll make the trip.
When do you have another roller coaster?
Will never happen again in my life.
Well, thanks a lot for the call.
Well, thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but a line is open now for you at 1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, no more gourmet magazine.
I know, Tom. I know you're so upset, and you never threw away an issue of gourmet. I love it. You never had an issue of gourmet, but you never threw one away. Well, if we look at gourmet and Bon Appetit, and they're basically produced by the same company, the same New York company, which produces a variety of other magazines. They actually cut out three magazines, a couple of bride magazines. Gourmet introduced people to the better way of life, mm-hmm. the better food, complex recipes. What are the best restaurants in Chicago when you're going to Chicago and living the high life? Mm-hmm. What are the best restaurants in Paris? What are the best restaurants in London? You think about when it started in the 50s, people were interested in this. It was a magazine that didn't have as many recipes as Bon Appetit, mm-hmm. which has continued. Bon Appetit probably had 50% or 100% more
recipes.
Why
did this magazine fold?
Well, let's look at what people are going. Now, everyone knows you don't cook. So we won't even put that into the fire.
Yeah, right.
But I cook a lot, yeah. And I like cooking. And I probably have 25 cookbooks. But I find myself, when I'm interested in a recipe, I go to the website and I look it up. So I may go to Epicurious, which is a great website. Mm-hmm. I may go to Cooks Illustrated, which I pay for because I like their recipes and it's worth $25 a year to me to get their recipes. Now, if you look up tomato soup, for instance, you'll get 500,000 or a million recipes. Well, how do you know which one is really a good recipe? Well, you don't necessarily know. And that's where cookbooks kind of come in.
There are also all of these TV shows that I channel past I go along that people who are interested in cooking have that avenue too.
Well, that's interesting. You say people aren't interested in cooking. I think Americans have become interested in food and it's a spectator sport. If you look at the number of people who are actually cooking, especially over the age of 35 or 40, if it's increased, it's increased marginally. It hasn't increased that much. If you look at the number of people who watch food, it's an enormous number. And, of course, our society has become preoccupied with food. The food channels have great stuff on it, as long as you actually look and you actually decide to make it. And as you know, I am a big proponent of cooking at home. Mm-hmm. Not every day. Forget it. It's not Ozzie and Harriet time back to the 50s. But at least on a regular basis with you, if you're living with someone else, it's especially important to cook because it's the preparation of food. And frankly, if you're living by yourself, it's even more important because you get a chance to touch the food and make the food and you make recipe and you bring leftovers to work. I think cooking is important.
I thought the reason that gourmet is folding is our recipe of the week. Is putting it out of business.
You betcha. We drove gourmet out of business. Yahoo! Yahoo!
Now, here's an idea. They must have a subscriber list for gourmet.
Yes, they do, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, why don't
we get it?
Why don't we get a hold of that and then let all of those subscribers know about Zorba Pastor and your health and this program?
Right. They'll know about our podcast. And all they have to do is come to ZorbaPastor.org and sign up for our podcast. And you will have the alternative to Gourmet Magazine. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
This advertisement bought and paid for by Dr. Zorba Pastor. 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I'm a student, so I have little money and even less insurance, and I think I've been experiencing heart palpitations.
Little money and less insurance.
Yes.
Welcome to the United States of America.
And my concern is, you know, I don't know if they're normal and I just notice them more than other people do, or if they're irregular but they're just benign, or if they're irregular and not good and I just need to spend some money and go have them checked out.
Oh, sure. How old are you?
I am 30.
You're 30. And heart disease, does it run in your family?
I think my grandfather on my father's side may have had a heart attack, and I know that he had a stroke.
Mm-hmm. But that was when he was older or when he was younger? Okay, so that. You smoke cigarettes?
No, I don't smoke. I don't drink. Mm-hmm. I run as often as what I can.
Ooh, sounds like not exactly what I would call a risque life from that point of view. Mm-hmm. How much coffee do you drink?
I'm a student, so it kind of runs in my veins.
The reason is it runs in my veins, and that has two meanings. It runs in my veins and it runs in my veins.
Yeah.
Quite often palpitations, most palpitations in a 30-year-old, 29, 30, or 31 are benign 99.9% of the time, unless you've got a history of a murmur, you've got other problems, something called IHSS, which is a genetic problem, in which case usually often in men more than women, and they die at a young age. So you don't have that. Often these are related. This is related to caffeine. And the only way to know basically is to say, I'm going to get off of caffeine. I'm going to see whether or not it does it. Now, that doesn't mean you can't stop all caffeine, but it may be you're taking twice as much as you should.
Okay.
And that's what I would do. That's the cheap, inexpensive test.
How's she going to pass the exam if she can't drink that much coffee?
I know.
I'll give you a note. That's right. Needs twice as much for exam. Note from Dr. Zorba Pastor. Believe me, it works everywhere. I write notes every day. You just call the station. It's not a problem at all. I'll give you a note. But that's what I would do. There are things that tend to produce irregular beats, PVC. SVCs are one type, SVT is another type. These are different acronyms for what kind of a beat it is. Caffeine can do it. Lack of sleep can do it. They both fit with students. And often it's late at night that people notice it when things are more quiet. Is that when you notice it or do you notice
it? Yeah, actually, most of the time it is, either when I'm just studying or it's happened before when I'm just, you know, just walking. But what has concerned me is some days it will... Sometimes I will go months or weeks without it happening, and sometimes it will just happen continuously throughout the day.
Right.
And sometimes it'll be associated with me actually feeling going faint.
Right. Well, what you want to do is you, without getting tested, because like you said, you don't have the funds, you want to find out whether or not it's caffeine related. So that's what
okay.
I would do. I'd cut out the caffeine, and then if that worked, then I would reintroduce it in a smaller dose and see what the dose is.
Okay.
That's what I would do. I wouldn't do it right away, by the way. If you're drinking a significant amount of coffee, you will get a caffeine, most likely get a caffeine withdrawal headache. So you kind of want to do half as much for a few days, half as much again for a few days, and so on.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for your help. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much for your call at 800-462-7413. Zorba, before we break, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Denise in El Paso, Texas, and also has to do with the heart. She writes, I try to go on short-distance evening runs at least 3 times a week, and lately I've been experiencing heartburn that starts midway during my run and lasts a few hours after. I'm 23 years old, and my diet hasn't changed much, and I usually only experience heartburn when I drink alcohol, so I try to avoid it as much as possible. Is there any other reason why I could be experiencing this?
Well, it's not unusual to experience heartburn, especially if you run or jog on an empty stomach, you haven't had anything to eat. So there are a couple of ways to do it. First of all, you can do the simple way, take a Tums or Rolaid, you know, or something of that nature before you actually run out and jog. That might be all you need. You know, just a little bit of over-the-counter antacid is a great way to go. And the other thing to do is it might be that you have to eat an hour or so before. Sometimes if you eat just before you run or you've had a long fast before you run, that produces too much acid in the stomach. So you vary it. You have a little bit of food, half an hour or an hour before you jog, and you've got food in your stomach. That might be the way to go. So antacid or a bit of food, that's what I'd go for.
Well, maybe instead of a water bottle, she can just run with a Pepto-Bismol
bottle. Oh, God, that's disgusting, Tom. That is disgusting. I can just imagine squirting it in the mouth and then you're running with that pink goo all over you.
If other heart-healthy activities are turning into heart-burning activities, let us know by sending us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, listen, we have a recipe coming up. It's from the vault, and it is delicious, so hang around for that. Lots more of your calls, some interesting research, our medical myth buster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, if you have a question for Zorba, is 800-462-7413. But right now, Zorba, it's recipe time. And as you know, from time to time, we like to put the spotlight on a recipe that was a past favorite in a segment we like to call Recipes from the Vault. Today's recipe
sounds like a horror film.
Today's recipe has been such a hit with listeners throughout the years, we thought we'd feature it once again. So here it is, our recipe from the Vault: jalapeno sea bass with almonds.
I love it from the Vault. It's great, though.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. This particular recipe, I've traveled, I travel quite a bit, and I've had comments on this recipe pretty much more than a lot of other recipes where mm-hmm. people say, I love that recipe. I make it all the time. And I thought, well, wow, we ought to do it again. So sea bass is one of my favorite fish. I don't eat it a lot because it tends to be more expensive. And
yeah, you don't
issues.
Find it a lot.
No, you don't find it a lot. It's an expensive fish.
Yeah.
You could do it with another white fish that would be good. It would have to be a thicker white fish. You certainly could use a halibut or cod. It won't taste as good because mm-hmm. sea bass is really yummy. It's almost fluffy. Mm-hmm. It's just a wonderful mm-hmm. texture. So 2 pounds of sea bass fillet.
2 pounds of sea bass fillet.
And if you're going to buy 2 pounds, you want to invite somebody over your house so you can enjoy it. Let me tell you that.
Right.
1/2 cup of white wine.
Half a cup of white wine.
As
now you're going to say what kind of white
of course,
wine.
You know that. You know
every
what
time
I say.
We have white wine.
I always
go
say
ahead.
Vermouth.
Go ahead.
It's cheap. It's inexpensive. I buy the Gallo brand because Cook's Illustrated said it was as good as anything else or better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I use. You could also use leftover white wine from the night before. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. from the night before.
Okay.
So you could do that. 1/2 cup of white vinegar.
1/2 cup of white vinegar.
I would not use balsamic. It'll add too much to it. It'll be too sweet to it. You certainly could use white wine vinegar. I would not use red wine vinegar again because it'll impart a taste, and you want to keep it as a white dish where you really enjoy the taste of the mm-hmm. sea bass. 1/2 teaspoon salt.
1/2 tea salt.
Kosher salt is what I like here. Use mm-hmm. a kosher salt. Pinch of sugar.
Bit of the sugar.
Pinch.
So pinch. What's the difference between pinch and bit?
Pinch and bit. Sounds like a restaurant or something. And bit. 3 cloves of garlic crushed.
3 cloves of garlic crushed.
Now, I was speaking to somebody the other day who happens to be a cookbook editor, and mm-hmm. I said, when you try a new recipe and you've read it, what do you do with the garlic? Because I tend to add more. And she said, I always triple the garlic.
Triple?
Yeah, because she loves garlic. So if you love garlic, instead of 3 cloves, it's 9 cloves.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I happen to love garlic.
I like
too.
Garlic, yeah.
3 medium green onions diced.
3 medium green onions diced.
Now, this is important. A lime peel grated. You can zest it. You can grate it. But you've got to get off the top of the peel. And that's where the aromatic hydrocarbons that make lime smell like a lime come from.
A lime peel zested, or what's the difference between zested and grated?
It's a difference in the in essentially what you're using in that little metal thing. Zesting essentially makes it much finer pieces, and grating is a bigger piece. So I don't know what you call it. The grater. I call it a grater. Mm-hmm. But anyway, zesting is finer. Either one will work fine. So zested or grated. 2 jalapeno peppers, and what you want to do is seed them and get rid of the seeds because that's where the heat is. Mm-hmm. You want the taste of the jalapeno without a lot of the hotness.
Got you. 2 of them, jalapeno peppers seeded and diced.
That's right. It'll still be hot, but it won't be super duper hot. Mm-hmm. Wash your hands, by the way, when you're done with those jalapenos, because if you itch your eye, like I did many years ago.
We've gone through this.
God. Here we go. Scratch and itch. I'll never get it right. Lord help me.
Anyway.
You know, my mother, may she rest in peace, always got those mixed up. So, romaine lettuce to garlic.
Romaine lettuce to garnish.
Sliced green onions to garlic.
Sliced green onions to garnish.
Sliced almonds to garnish.
Sliced almonds to garnish.
Sea salt and freshly ground pepper to taste.
Sea salt and pepper. Freshly ground.
That's right, freshly ground. The important thing is this particular dish, if you're going to spend that much money on the sea bass, mm-hmm. you want to make it in a good mm-hmm. presentation. Mm-hmm. You want to put it on a beautiful plate. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rinse and dry the sea bass. You rinse it and you dry it with a paper towel. It should be dry. And you're going to place it in a non-reactive baking dish. Now, here's the marinade. In a covered jar, combine wine, vinegar, salt, sugar, garlic, green onions, lime, and jalapeno pepper. Cover the jar, shake, rattle, and roll until it's well mixed. And then in a small bowl, take out about 1/3 of the marinade. Pour the remaining marinade over the fish, turning the coat to cover and refrigerate for at least 30 minutes, between mm-hmm. 30 minutes and 3 to 4 mm-hmm. hours. So you could even stay in for all day, probably. You could do it in the morning. Now, start the grill, or if you're going to broil it, turn on the broiler, and you turn to cook each side of the fish. Now, I can't give you the exact amounts, but basically, when the fish starts to flake, that's when you stop the cooking. And if you have a good cookbook, as everyone should have in their house, such mm-hmm. as The Joy of Cooking or Everything You Wanted to Cook from Cook's Illustrated, it'll give you an idea of how long you're going to grill it or cook it, mm-hmm. or broil it. But it's very important not to overdo it because it will dry out the fish and it won't taste as good. So if it's grilling, you want to brush it often with the reserve marinade to keep it moist. If you're going to put it under the broiler, it's not as important. But frankly, I brush it when I turn it over. Then take the fish out immediately. Put it right on the lettuce greens on a serving platter, atop, of course, with the almonds on top of it, and garnish with the green onions, and serve immediately.
Mm, delicious.
Immediately.
Huh?
Oh, it is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And you may want to serve this with a little dirty rice, maybe dirty rice,
yeah,
which is very easy to make. Mm-hmm. There are lots of good recipes for this on the web, and maybe I probably would have some nice white wine, and it's a delicious dish.
Our listeners should know that Zorba, in order to make sure the bass is fresh, always catches the bass.
That's right.
Himself.
Yes, and it's of course sea bass. So I go to the Chilean Ocean, where most of it is, and immediately come back through my Star Trek ship, warp speed, to make it back to the house. Right, Tom.
And again, if there's a recipe you remember but can't find, or if there's one you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know what it is, and it might end up being our next recipe from the vault. Just send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Let's see now, Zorba, if we can help a listener in College Station, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Last December, a friend of mine who's a naturopathic doctor invited me to go to Sammamish, Washington, so we could do a complete workup. And I thought, sure. About a month later, she called to give me the results, and I was kind of startled because she said, Jorge, you're a good friend, so I'm going to tell you this, and you've got metabolic disorder. You're almost pre-diabetic. And I was kind of horrified by that and have been thinking about it since and wanted to know a little bit more about what exactly is metabolic syndrome and how do I keep it from becoming diabetes.
Uh-huh. Well,
I was just going to ask, do you have any idea how she came up with the diagnosis?
Well, she took quite a few tests, blood tests, thyroid, cholesterol, triglycerides, and unfortunately, I don't have them in front of me. So I kind of stopped listening after she said I was pre-diabetic.
Yeah.
You stopped listening. Yes.
It's like when you get really bad news, you just stop listening, and she was fairly certain that I had to change my lifestyle or my eating habits or something for me to avoid full-blown diabetes.
Sure. First of all, let's talk about diabetes. Diabetes, has a very specific definition. It's 125 or higher for fasting blood sugar. That's what it is. And there are different ways that we do it. There are other ways to define it. But generally, it's an elevated blood sugar, and then there's something called the hemoglobin A1C that also tends to follow a pattern there. Metabolic syndrome is different, and it's defined in different ways by different organizations and people. And what it is, it's a variety of things, one of which is often an elevated blood glucose, which means you have something called insulin resistance. Unless you need insulin, that's usually what it means. The second thing is triglycerides, often. So your triglycerides may have been elevated. The next thing often is weight. Where's your weight?
I'm 5'7" and I weigh 175.
In our state, we wouldn't call that overweight. In the state of Wisconsin, we'd call that right on. But the reality is, you're somewhat overweight, but you're not too overweight. In other words, you could lose that, and that's the best way to treat the whole thing.
Okay.
And once again, there are other things that can enter into the definition of metabolic syndrome, but it basically means insulin resistance because often of weight and lack of exercise that produces an increased blood sugar. So often a cholesterol issue, a lipid issue, either with cholesterol, LDL, bad cholesterol, or triglycerides. So often some people will include borderline or complete hypertension and abdominal obesity, weight along the trunk.
Now, is it accurate, Zorba, to characterize this as pre-diabetic?
We now use pre-diabetic. We used to get rid of it, and now we call it either pre-diabetic or abnormal blood sugar. And basically from 100 to 123, 124, many people call it pre-diabetic or abnormal blood sugar. And the reason is we know that 10 to 20% of these people every year will become diabetics. So the term is useful because the term means that we're going to say, hey, you're pre-diabetic. You got to make a change in your diet in order to keep it from happening. So the bottom line for you is this. You got 20 pounds you don't want to have.
Right.
You got to reduce it. And it means calories. It's not just exercise. It means old-fashioned 1 to 200 calories less per day. Hard to do because these calories sneak up like a thief in the night. And
they
just,
do.
You know, it's just tough.
I work in a department. I'm a faculty member at A&M, and their department, and there's always cookies and stuff around.
That's it.
And
that's
I walk by, and they call to me.
No, I understand. I understand. I said, eat me, eat me.
Yeah, they're like sirens, you know, I can't resist them.
Eat me. That's very funny. That's very funny. You know, I have to tell you, that's funny because today when I was coming in to do the show, I walked through a building, and there were cookies there, and they called to me, and I asked the person there, I said, could I have a cookie? Because I heard it too. It said, eat me, eat me.
I know.
And she said, sure, you can have a cookie. But that's what it is. And so you have to say, no, I'm not going to eat you, because that's basically what it is.
Right.
It's those 100 to 200 calories. And frankly, it's a big cookie.
Right.
Good luck to you. You
Thank
can
you.
Do it.
Thank you. I appreciate the help.
Thank you so much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, my problem today is I have a sweating issue in that I sweat a lot. And, I mean, I walk down the street on a summer day, and it looks like I've been jumping rope in the attic. That doesn't concern me. What concerns
me is jumping rope in the attic. That's such an image. You're up in the attic. It's hot. It's St. Louis, and I'm jumping rope to work out for the marathon or the boxing ring. I love the image.
But, that's not what concerns me, because it's the fact that it's cold outside, and I'm still sweating, and it's almost always underarm sweat, which is embarrassing to say the least, and kind of hurts my professional life a little bit. So it's very excessive, and I was just wondering if there's any ideas that you had in mind that could help.
So when you're sweating, you're not talking about sweating. It's sweating under your arms and on your face, or where do you sweat?
Just underarm.
Just underarms. Okay.
Yep.
Just underarms. Okay. And what do you use? What do you put under your arms?
Well, I've been mixing it up lately, trying to find a different things. Right now I'm using Arid antiperspirant.
Okay. Has it made any difference using one versus the other?
Actually, the one that actually made a difference was baking soda.
Okay. And that's probably because it absorbs it and makes a difference. Because the antiperspirants that are on the market pretty much are regulated by the feds. They can't have any more than a certain amount of the aluminum compound that's used. Baking soda, what does it do to your shirts?
It makes them pretty ugly. I can only wear them once before I have to do laundry.
Yeah, you can. I mean, that's usually what it is. The answer to you is Drysol. That's exactly what you want to have. It's a great chemical by prescription. It's not over the counter, and it's wonderful. It's a super formulated antiperspirant, and basically you put it under your arms, and it works beautifully. It stops the sweating. You follow the instructions from your doc. Underneath the arms, you generally put it on 2 to 3 times a week, sometimes every day until you get it under control, and then once or twice a week will work. And what we want to do is shut off those apocrine glands, which are the glands which are the underarm glands, which are kind of a little bit different. Do certain things tend to make it a little bit more like a fear or attraction? Stress will often do that. Stress will turn them on because those are under psychological. Well, there's some psychological and some non-psychological aspects. Some people sweat more, but things that make us sweat are either attraction, sexual attraction, or fear. Those are things that will do it. And then for other people, the sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system simply reacts to life, and you're just one of those guys. So that's what I would do. I try the Drysol and see what works.
And quit that exercising in the attic.
Yeah.
I'll take that. That's good advice.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, we have kind of a theme going through the show. This is the second
That's right. We've got these sweat themes, you know, workout, you know, no gain, no pain, no pain, no gain, yes, sweat. Yeah, that's our thing.
Well, let's take a moment
Don't
here.
Sweat it, Tom.
Very good. We'll take a moment here to check in on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. You may remember, Zorba, that during a recent rapid fire segment, you said that it was okay to microwave breast milk. Well, it didn't take our listeners long to crash our inbox with dissent. Allison, a nursing student from La Crosse, Wisconsin, summed up our listener's rebuttal well, quoting, "Microwaving breast milk is not okay due to the fact that it heats the milk unevenly, which could lead to the baby being burned. Also, overheating the milk can destroy some of the nutrients."
Well, I think she has a very good point. First of all, the milk will be heated unevenly on a stove also, because when you put it in a pot, there's heat that's in the corners of the pot, you know, around the ends of the pot and not in between. But when you take the milk out and you pour it into the bottle, it's then going to mix at that point. Whereas microwaving it will say in a pre-bottle in the oven, or rather in the microwave oven might do that. On the other hand, if you were to microwave it and then you know that it could have hot spots and you move it back and forth, as most moms do and dads do when they're doing it, and you check it on your hand.
Don't moms put it on their hand?
Well, and so do dads. I mean, I had four kids, and you would check it on your hand.
Well, when I was growing up, moms did it.
Well, that was in the day, Tom. That was in the day. But in my time, it was moms and dads.
That's a lie.
It was moms and dads. But you check it. You don't give it to your baby before that. You check it on your own.
Right.
But this may be a style issue. I mean, there may be a style issue. The main thing is, I think the point that she brings up is you can't heat up milk without checking to make sure that the milk is at the right temperature, which is luke. And you've got to check that before the baby. And I think that's the bottom line. But yeah, I stand corrected. You might want to use one versus the other.
If Zorba says something that gets you overheated, send in your rebuttal for our next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Coming up next, some really interesting research to talk over. We have more of your calls at a medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up, but before our next, the high fructose corn syrup people would like a name change.
That's right. They want to get rid of the name of high fructose corn syrup, which, as you know, is having kind of a, you know, a blah bad name. They want to now call it corn sugar.
It'll be much better if it's corn sugar.
That's right. Yummy. I can't wait to eat a bunch of corn sugar because it's so much better than high fructose corn syrup. The issue is that people are now thinking that maybe high fructose corn syrup isn't good for us. Now, if we look at the obesity epidemic that's occurred in our society, it's because we've habituated ourselves to sweeter and sweeter and sweeter things. And also, it turns out that high fructose corn syrup is cheaper than regular cane sugar, and so it became widely used in soft drinks and basically in other foods.
Well, I can't think of really good reason not to let them change this name.
Well, they're changing the name because they want to obfuscate the fact that you've got a lot of sweet stuff in there.
But
they want to make it sound healthier.
I mean, sugar is no less sweet than corn
but,
sugar.
But what happens is that the society is now looking at it and saying, I'm not going to eat the foods with high fructose corn syrup, which they shouldn't eat. And if they then look at the food and they say, oh, it has sugar, it's okay, I think you're basically I think what you're doing, it's bait and switch. It's a sham.
Well, it isn't a sham. Is this more dangerous to us than regular sugar?
Well, that's the big question. The big question that we haven't answered with nutritionists, and for years I thought sugar is sugar is sugar. Yeah. It's not going to make a difference. They're all the same number of calories, that's for sure. but one may be more addictive than others. We may want to have more of it than others. We don't really understand the obesity epidemic, but it may be that high fructose corn syrup is involved in that. Michael Pollan, who's an author, has been berating this for years, and there are a number of other nutritionists who say, no, all sugars are not the same. Yes, they have the same number of calories, but they may affect the brain differently.
Yeah, well, there may be a guy at the top of Jack's Beanstalk, too, but we don't know that there is. We have no evidence. What's it? Shouldn't we just let them change their name until we find that there's something different?
No, because they're changing their name because they have a bad name because it's been put in everything and people shouldn't be eating it because it makes them obese. And if you change the name so people say, oh, it's okay, I can have this because it has sugar, the answer is no, they shouldn't have those many calories anyway.
What's the process they're going through now?
Well, they're talking to the FDA. The FDA will look at it. They'll make some changes. I think the process happens to be a governmental process of how this is going to work. The bottom line is, whether it has sugar in it or high fructose corn syrup, it's too many calories, folks. And the answer is we want to limit it. And I believe calorie is a calorie is a calorie. But it is possible that high fructose corn syrup, or perhaps with the new name corn sugar, might be more addictive than regular table sugar.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's welcome a listener now in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello, Zorba.
What's up?
I am 47-year-old, very healthy male, low cholesterol, low blood pressure and everything. And last winter, I started getting just really cold hands and feet. And I'm by nature a warm-natured person. And just confused the heck out of me. Recently ruled out that I had Raynaud's from a rheumatologist here, but not sure what to do next. He suggested possibly a calcium beta blocker. I know there's some side effects about that, but just curious what thoughts you might have. Oh, and by the way, after a run yesterday, after being cold all day, my hands and feet both seemed fine, and I was able to wear shorts into the evening.
Gotcha.
So what do I do?
Well, first of all, Raynaud's phenomena, which is a circulatory issue where often people get a pain at the end of their fingers or their fingers turn white when they touch cold things, is one of the things that it's kind of a clinical evaluation. There's no absolute test for that. But if you go to a rheumatologist, family doc, internist, and they say you don't have it, you probably don't have it. And when I say probably, if you Google the word Raynaud's phenomena, you'll see it's a very specific thing. The phenomena itself in that your fingers often turn white. But you can have a variation of Raynaud's phenomena where you don't have everything that's in there, but you have some of what's in there. I think that this is a variation of Raynaud's phenomena. That's what I think. I think that's what it is. And the treatment for that is sometimes a calcium channel blocker, which is a blood pressure pill, can work. You have to decide if you want to take the pill and see if it works. And you might have side effects because it lowers blood pressure. And for some people, it may lower it. And other people, it doesn't in a small dose. So you can decide that. And you can decide, well, if it works, do I want to take a pill? That's a completely different issue. It's very individual. Some people say, I want to get rid of it. I want to try a pill. I'm sick of it. And other people say, nah, I want to do it by a natural way and do it without a pill. And the natural way is you wear socks and you wear gloves. That's what you do.
Now, he said he had a run and felt fine after. So
sure,
he didn't have it after
do.
Running.
No, he didn't. Now, I will add on a personal note that I never had a cold hands or cold feet until I was sort of in my late 40s, early 50s. And now my right hand is warm and my left hand is cold. Now, you figure that out. I mean, I have not the foggiest idea, and I've done lots of research, and it's such a difference. I think it's a difference of 1 or 2 degrees that I'll put it on people and they'll say, oh, what's going on there?
As fascinating as that is, how come he, after he has a run, doesn't have this problem?
Well, because after you have a run, you're getting rid of the heat in the body from the basic energy that's been expended by your muscles. And you sweat and you're warm after a run. You're not cold. When you run out, you're not cold. If you're cold, there's something wrong. You're warm. And so that's another method. But you're not going to go... You're not going to go cure it by running from place to place.
Well, I was going to say that'd be the way to do it.
You'll notice from place to place, you know. You always have an interesting view of these kind of things. I think you're right. Now, the other problem is if I tell you to move to the Southwest, like New Mexico, they're going to have air conditioning.
Well,
you're going to have the same
problem.
He's
in Knoxville. That isn't that cold.
Well, how cold does it get in Knoxville in the wintertime?
Well, I'm from Florida, so it's cold to me.
See, it varies.
But not like Wisconsin.
Right.
Not like Wisconsin. It's all relative. So the answer is you probably have a variation of Raynaud's. You may want to try a low dose of a pill. As I said, it's an individual circumstance to see if a teeny tiny dose will make a difference, taken once a day or once every other day. Sometimes an extremely small dose will make a difference and not have side effects, and that's what you have to decide. It's either that or suit up and glove up. That's what it is.
And will I have to take the pill ongoing?
Ever. Forever. Yeah.
Forever.
For most people, it's forever. Right. I don't know any other natural way. You've Googled Raynaud's phenomenon, I'm sure, haven't you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You see, he's a public radio person. They all Google. Why do they listen to public radio when they have Google? Because we give value.
Thank you so very much.
Sure. Good luck with it.
Anything else to add? Any diet? Anything?
No. Diet is not going to... Well, you've gone to the Raynaud's website. I'm sure there are websites out there where they're selling everything from, you know, fish oil to fish oil. I mean, they're selling all this, you know, all the stuff. Yeah. Save your money. Don't buy any natural cures.
Great.
And thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Chris in Sandpoint, Idaho, that deals with goosebumps. Chris explains, my 22-year-old daughter swears that immediately after she gets goosebumps on her legs, the hair on her legs gets longer. I'm assuming she judges this by suddenly feeling more stubble, especially if she's shaved recently. Any truth to this phenomenon?
Well, I think the truth is with the mom, and what happens is when you get goosebumps, which is either a response to cold weather or flight or fright, animals put up flight or fright because when we had lots of hair on it, it would stand on end and we would appear to be bigger. Mm-hmm. That's the theory, and for cold weather, it keeps you warmer. But what happens is then the stubble stands straight up, and so she feels the hair as being longer because the hair otherwise is more in a horizontal position on the skin.
Yeah.
So it's a perceptual issue. It's a myth that your hair actually gets longer with goosebumps. That's the myth.
Yeah.
The answer is no, the hair just stands on end with the goosebumps. But she, being a mom, should be very gentle in how she corrects her daughter as to this particular
myth. Well,
she
can always blame it on the doc.
Ah, there you go.
Don't be afraid to send in a myth you'd like Zorba to bust. Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Want another call?
Yes.
Let's do it. A listener in Edwardsville, Illinois now. Hi.
Hello, you too. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. How can we help?
Well, I have a hairy situation also.
That's very good.
Several years ago, I changed my hairstyle.
Mm-hmm.
I had always had straight hair. And as my hairdresser was cutting my hair, changing it from a blunt cut to a layered cut, if you know what that is,
mm-hmm.
and as she started to cut my wet hair, she said, "Where are these curls coming from?"
Mm.
And I said, "What are you talking about? I have straight hair." Now, she's been my hairdresser for years, so she knew that also. And she said, "You got curls now." And I don't know how that could have happened because the follicles of straight hair are different from those of curly hair. Well, afterwards, after thinking about it, I got to checking, and I noticed that my right eyelashes had curled, the left ones had not.
Zorba?
Well, first of all, there is no difference in the follicle of curly hair. They produce different hair, so we know that people with curly hair produce more curly hair. The follicle is the same. It just produces a different structure, and that's based on genes.
So from straight hair to curly hair?
Well, I think hair just varies throughout the life space. So some people will have some curly hair when they're children. We know little kids. My daughter, Vanessa, youngest daughter, she had curly hair until she was 3 years old, and then it straightened out. You know, why did it straighten out? Oh, I don't know. Just the way that it is. And now she has sort of semi-straight, semi-curly hair. But I don't have an answer as to why it happens. These things, though, do happen through the life space where you will change from a change. And chemicals will do it. Stress can do it. Time does it. A whole bunch of things. There are a lot of things we don't understand about hair. And you've got something that we don't understand very well. So the main thing is, as long as you're happy, that's all that counts.
But why did one eyelash turn curly and the other one straight?
You'll have to call us up. We only answer one question at a time on this show. Sorry.
I got it.
You have a great day.
And okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. Well, we're almost out of time, Zorba, but before we leave, you'll have to pay a small fine to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. Although this one you saw coming, kind of like when you know you're parking illegally. It comes to us from Deputy Pat in Niagara Falls. It has to do with your pronunciation of the Japanese word for the fifth taste sense, umami. After 8 years in Japan, Deputy Pat is certainly qualified to issue you this fine. She writes, the Japanese word for that savory, meaty taste is umami, not unami or umani. Umami. U as in tool, ma as in mom, me as in you and me. The word comes from the adjective umai, normally used to mean delicious or savory. There's also another all-purpose Japanese word for delicious, which is oishi. And by the way, if I got that wrong, I don't want to hear from you.
I got it, though. Umami. Umami. Umami.
Excellent.
I got it. It's in my brain. I will do it right. I promise my mommy.
And if you'd like to join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police or teach Zorba another foreign language, send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org. I don't think anyone is ever going to teach me another foreign language.
See you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom, and stay well.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Groucho and Harpo, otherwise known as Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich, which one can't talk, are the two guys on the other side of the glass mimicking Zorba and me. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting you to join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0925Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.